The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 23rd day of April, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's out of Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news for the day, the U.S. has delayed a plan to impose additional duties on European products in retaliation for its ban on hormone-fed U.S. beef. USDA is reviewing more than 14,000 civil rights complaints filed against it, and the California Air Resources Board is set to make a decision that could have a big impact on ethanol use in that state and around the nation. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. And then closer to the end of this half-hour program, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. And it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report, of course, is a production of public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon. Futures like this from the grains floor, nearby wheat contract in the May at 529 and a quarter, 12 and a half higher for the day. July at 540 and three quarters, up 12 and three quarters. September at 567 and three quarters, up 12 and a half. And December at 590 and three quarters, up 12 and a half. The March at 605 and three quarters, 12 cents higher. May corn futures 381, up 7.5. July 397 and a half higher. And September corn at 399 and three quarters, up 7.5. December futures 8.25 higher at $4.11.5. And the March contract 423.5, up 8.25. May oat futures up 11.75 at $1.94. July at 203, up 12. May soybeans nearby 8 cents and a quarter lower at $10.37 and three quarters for the May. July at 10.32, down 7. August 10.08 and a half, down 6.5. And September 9.65 and a half, down 2 cents. November soybeans at 9.23 and a half, a half cent lower. January 2010 contract at 9.28 and a quarter, down 3 quarters. May bean meal at 3.24.90, down 4.90. May oil up 11 at 36.20. Mercantile exchange numbers finished the nearby live cattle 87.75, 17 and a half higher. April feeders at 99.55, 2.5 lower. And the lean hogs finished the May a buck 10 lower at 69.55. This is the closing market report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures 77 cents higher a barrel at $49.62. The July at 51.07, up 37 cents on the afternoon. May ethanol futures for the day at $3.40 and 8 cents of a cent, 12 and 4 tenths lower. May RBOB gasoline at $1.39 and 3 cents, just about 2 tenths of a cent higher. And the May heating oil, that's diesel fuel, down a penny and 3 tenths at 131 and 6 tenths. May propane futures unchanged at 63 and a half cents. June there at 64 and 4 tenths, just about unchanged as well. Gold futures at $905.90, up $14.10 an ounce. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 79.40, just about 54 points higher. The U.S. dollar for the afternoon at 85.51 is down 0.76. The CRB index at 219.77 is up 1.1 on the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is a production, of course, of WILL in Urbana. It is a broadcasting service of the College of Media right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Don't forget to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find this program, other ag programming that you can listen to anytime you'd like. And you can also subscribe to our weekend newsletter. Can't get to the website, can't hear us on the radio. How about dialing this number, 217-333-3434. We call it our mobile analyst portal. It's just voicemail, and it's 217-333-3434. We update with numbers and analysis at 10:15 and 3:15 daily.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
It's a Thursday afternoon. This is the closing market report. On the line with us to talk about the agricultural futures markets, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Hey, it's a beautiful day outside. I'll bet there are a few farmers that are moving and probably wondering what they should be doing, both with the old crop, soybeans and corn that they have left, and the new crop that they're just about to put in the ground. What do you say?
Well, beans have been the star over the past couple, 3 months. They've had a nice climb, especially out of the early March lows. Demand remains good, but, you know, when you take into account the weather pattern as such that it kind of looks like we're going to maybe have a little smaller wheat crop. That's what kicked the wheat up here today. That kind of spilled on over and kind of helped corn a little bit on ideas that maybe some of these planting delays are going to maybe lag on for a little longer than what everybody expected. So I think you're beginning to kind of tilt new crop prospects of maybe the market worrying about corn supplies, wheat supplies, and not necessarily worrying too much about soybean supplies, because soybeans will be the last to be planted. And if you run further delays in the spring wheat area and further corn planting delays, you have a high risk anyway of increasing soybean acres. So I think you're seeing an overall shift here, or at least there's an indication of it based upon what we saw here today.
When you look at the weekly chart for the continuation, or actually for the harvest month, at this point you've got an outside up hook week, I guess, hook up this week. Do you think that will finish up tomorrow that way?
Well, we're behind. When you look for the November bean contract, last Friday we closed here at, I've got 9:35 and we're at 9:23. So we're actually lower for the week, because we did have that little reversal down, basically on Friday, and then the market, sold off sharply, there on Monday. And since Monday though, we've been trying to regroup, but we are, down for the month on, November beans, old crop beans. We're still down for old crop beans too. Friday we closed at 10:51, and today here we're at 10:37. So with 1 day to go, we're down for the week. The price action, at least the way it looks like on the chart here on old crop beans, is not very friendly. It's actually on the bearish side, because we did have a higher open here this morning. The market failed and reversed downward. And this is coming off of the reversal down that we had there last Friday. So it is indicating that the bean market has run into some pretty stiff resistance up in this 1050, 1070 area on the May contract.
I was looking at the December corn contract as a hookup for the week if it manages to
The corn is,
yeah.
You're correct. Corn is in a position here to, depend upon how we follow through tomorrow or so, and that'll mm-hmm. probably depend upon what the weather forecast is. But
right.
Corn's in a position to kind of close out the week higher after having a sharply lower start of the week. We've regained everything. December corn here did close a half cent or so above its widely followed 50-day moving average here today. So technically, corn probably is in a much better shape here today than soybeans to kind of regroup here and regain some of what it's lost here over the past 2 to 3 weeks.
Are we using 10-week cycles at the moment on corn, or where do you think we stand? Because I guess I was counting, and I'm thinking that last big low down in the 350 area, which would have come in, what, December on the weekly, it
yes.
would be 13 weeks, right? And then we'd be at 7 weeks if you're looking. Did I count that right?
You're counting it right. Now, the 20-week cycle, and what you're looking at here is a 20-week cycle, and that 20-week cycle unfolds a couple different ways, or three different ways. It could go a couple tens, three six to sevens, couple 6-7s and a 10 or 10 plus a 6-7. And it does look like
we've got 13-7 at the moment, right?
Yeah, we've had a couple 6-10s. You had the first 6-10 there in the first part of January, right after the crop report, I think.
Right.
Then you had another 6-7 here early March, and the 6-7 this week. So the 20-week corn cycle does look to be in position to be a supportive influence as we go on into May here.
But what does, when you talk to the folks there that are the buyers, what do they think about delayed planting at this point? Does it bother them at all? And I'm wondering mostly because we know from current research that bushels are being lost, but of course we know from last year and previous years that while those bushels are being lost, the potential is so much higher in the field that it hasn't had a great impact at this point.
Well, on the domestic front, you know, which are primarily going to be your ethanol-type people, it's going to be your feedlot people, hog people, chicken people. Of course, livestock, the numbers are down. They're actually maybe even contracting a little bit more. We've all talked about the end user not necessarily having a lot of cash around, so they stay kind of hand-to-mouth. They're not wanting to expand because they don't know whether or not the economy is going to be in worse shape 6 months from now or better. So they're real conservative. Yes, planning delays worry them, but they're not necessarily in a position, I think, to buy a big chunk forward anyway. So they still continue to stay hand-to-mouth. I think just about, you know, when you go back in the past, and every year is a little different, the market really doesn't get cranked up about planting delays until you kind of get into at least the May 10th time frame. May 10th, that is when you begin to really seriously lose acreage potentials. I know we talk about those bushels that we kind of lose, but I'm not too sure that can really be validated to set to everybody's satisfaction. And basically, we're planting corn in the far northern areas this week. So the problem areas on planting delays and whatnot are more south and east, and they're the last to be frosted anyway. So you know, we're not really running a risk of losing many acres yet. The way the trade's looking at it from a historical point of view, Tom.
So from your point of view, the grains, corn and wheat, will be taking the lead maybe at this point. Which is more likely to push the market higher, faster, wheat or corn?
Wheat. Uh-huh. Wheat is you have a bigger risk of shaving off potential wheat supplies with much smaller acreage levels in the northern plains, and if we stay in an excessive wet pattern in the lower half of the Corn Belt, you may begin to get there may be such a thing as too much rain, and we begin to maybe lose bushels that way. So, but they're both going to be. But wheat's the one that kind of got it going today. Wheat's kind of the short leg of every spread in Chicago. There's huge short positions, so if those shorts are forced to buy their way out, wheat's going to be a pretty strong commodity to deal with here over the next 2 to 3 weeks, and that's going to, you know, like I said, that'll spill over and help corn, and corn will increasingly get nervous if, depending upon how wet this weekend is or early next week, and how much corn's going to be planted in Illinois and Indiana and eastward, and what kind of delays. Because, I mean, May 1 here, what do we got, 7 days left of April? So
right.
May 1 is getting close, and we are starting to have people start biting their fingernails.
All right. Well, wheat is a pretty finicky crop when it comes to being wet and disease. I know that if you're going to treat a disease on wheat, only 1% of it has to be infected before they call in and try to salvage that crop. So we'll have to keep track of that as well as rainfall across most of the Midwest. Anything as a final word before I let you go?
Well, like I mentioned to Dave this morning, I think one of the biggest outside influences is the value of the dollar. I
mm-hmm.
think it tells you everything. And we have had a pretty good decline in the dollar here today. So that does I think, provide underlying support to the whole general commodity complex. We haven't did any damage yet to this sideways to higher climb that we've had over the past 5 weeks, but today's sharp decline is at least suggesting that the dollar could be under pressure next week, and if we get some further weather problems, the commodity market's going to probably perk up.
Dan, thanks so much.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Thursday afternoon. If you'd like to hear what he has to say again, you can do that on our website. The address is willag.org. It's willag.org. There you can listen to Dan again. You can download him as a podcast. And if you can't do one of those and listen to us on the radio, you can always hear us on the telephone at 217-333-3434. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with all the agricultural news for the afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products, including Asgro's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
In agricultural news, the United States is delaying for 2 weeks a plan to impose additional duties on European Union products in retaliation for an EU ban on hormone-fed beef. U.S. Trade Representative Ron Kirk says, quote, "The EU has demonstrated seriousness in their efforts to solve this problem, and 2 additional weeks should be sufficient to establish whether we can address the remaining issues successfully." Industry sources have said the EU has proposed increasing its quota for beef from cattle that are not fed hormones. The EU banned U.S. beef from hormone-fed cattle in 1988 on the grounds that the hormones were not approved in the EU, but a World Trade Organization dispute resolution panel found that the EU ban on beef was not supported by science. USDA plans to review more than 14,000 civil rights complaints that have been filed against the agency since 2000. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says the department will create a task force to review a sample of the complaints filed in the last 9 years, supported by an independent legal counsel. Black farmers, mostly from the South, have long complained that they have been consistently denied loans, grants, and other assistance by a good old boy network of local USDA field offices. Hispanic and American Indian farmers have also filed lawsuits against the department. The California Air Resources Board decision set for today on a proposed low-carbon fuel standard could shrink the market for corn-based ethanol due to indirect land use rules. For the past year, ethanol industry officials have criticized the proposed regulations for penalizing corn-based ethanol for indirect land use changes when calculating ethanol's carbon score. California would consider corn-based ethanol to be a greenhouse gas emissions contributor if the regulations are approved. The regulation could lead the way for other states and countries to adopt similar laws that could hurt ethanol's market. USDA says 11 northeastern states are ready to adopt the California standard, which could shrink the U.S. ethanol market by about 30%. The International Monetary Fund says the world economy is likely to shrink this year for the first time in 6 decades. The IMF projected the 1.3% drop in a dour forecast released yesterday. The new forecast of a decline in global economic activity for 2009 is much weaker than the 0.5% growth the IMF had established in January. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find this program and Commodity Week, other ag programming you can download and listen to directly from your computer or have it delivered automatically to your computer as a podcast. It's all at willag.org. You can sign up for our free weekend newsletter. Just hit subscribe over on the right-hand side of the page. If you don't like it, just hit unsubscribe. And if you'd like to tell us a bit more about yourself, we sure would like that. Hit manage and you can fill in some information. It's all over on the right-hand side of the page at willag.org. Up next, we'll continue our conversation that we've been having with Emerson Nafziger, Extension Agronomist from the University of Illinois, about corn production in the state and why, at this point, planting delays are causing more problems than they have in the past, more problems in terms of bushels lost coming earlier in the season. You start to lose bushels, in fact, the last week of April. We'll hear more momentarily. It used to be if corn was in the ground by the 15th of May, everything was good. Getting started by the 1st of May was the norm. And while the later date really hasn't moved today, it does represent a much more dire scenario than it did, say, in 1989. That starting date, what used to be May 1, is where things have really changed. A just-released 4-year-long University of Illinois study has the proof. Extension agronomist Emerson Nafziger conducted the research.
Yes, our optimums that we calculated that are in the article last week are around the middle, the 15th to the 20th of April. I think the biggest difference has probably been that we don't have some of the negatives to early planting that we had at that time. And you remember a time when we worried a lot. Well, can we put it in the soil in the 10th of April? Will it be okay? Will the seed come up? Will we be able to control weeds? Will we get insects? We've taken steps, some sound and some maybe not so sound, to reduce most of those problems so that all the seed now is bred and produced for best vigor possible. We use a lot of seed treatments, including insecticide, and we don't have the issues with tillage for weed control or other methods of weed control that we might have thought were important at one time. It's kind of difficult to assume if you plant April the 10th that you can rotary hoe, for example, especially in a high residue situation. So that whole situation has changed a great deal. I think seed quality is almost as good as it can get. The genetics for emergence have been selected very well. And so we've really put behind us most of those problems that we would have seen as major detriments at one time.
Nafziger says he doesn't even really keep a list anymore of the disadvantages of early planting. For the most part, he's thrown away that staple soil thermometer and does not worry about cold soil temperatures. However, the agronomist does concede wet soil temps bother him greatly and represent the reason not to plant a field. Short and long-term compaction implications are too great to risk mudding in a crop. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas. Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, Hudsonville, Illinois, and Crescent City, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Police say onboard video cameras aren't as widely used in squad cars as they ought to be. The family of a Texas medical student who was shot and killed by police in an April 6 incident near Oakwood is angry that police have not shown them a video of the incident. The only camera was in a Villa Grove officer's car, which was far away from the scene. State police say smaller departments are often the first to get squad car video cameras because they don't have as many cars to equip as bigger departments. The Villa Grove unit was bought as a part of a grant to curb drunk driving. Ousted Governor Rod Blagojevich's former chief of staff has pleaded not guilty to federal corruption charges. Alonzo Monk was silent for most of the five-minute arraignment today before Judge James Zagel, but he did acknowledge that he was pleading not guilty. An Iroquois County judge has sentenced a former volunteer firefighter to 3 years in prison for arson. The judge, Susan Tungate, sentenced 24-year-old Stephen Stout, who admitted setting fire to the garage at his home in the Loda area in November of 2007. A $1 million gift from film critic Roger Ebert will strengthen a budding department within the University of Illinois College of Media. Dean Ron Yates says the grant from the longtime Chicago Sun-Times columnist will establish the Roger Ebert Program for Film Studies and eventually lead to a full-fledged film studies center with additional donors. 12 state historic sites in Illinois are back in business. Governor Quinn officially reopened Springfield's Dana Thomas House this morning, several months after it and other sites around the state were shuttered by former Governor Blagojevich. He had cited budget concerns, but Quinn called the closings misguided. The Lincoln Log Cabin site in Coles County and Bement's Bryant Cottage were also among those reopened today. Nearly 50 people gathered at the Indiana State House this morning to urge lawmakers to pass legislation that would regulate large-scale dog breeders, often called puppy mills. Some of the demonstrators brought dogs that were rescued from breeders. Both the House and Senate in Indiana have passed versions of the legislation. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. It is a Thursday afternoon. Meteorologist Peter Levitt is on the line with us to talk about the weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the globe. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
We better start with the Midwest, and maybe we can start with the eastern Midwest, where it looks like there might be a window.
Yes, I think there will be, and it's really the eastern Corn Belt, the east of the Mississippi River. I think we've got 3 days now of very good weather, just a few chances of some sprinkles in northern Illinois late today. I think the air is really too dry for that to be worth anything. But then warmer air streams in, and we're going to be seeing temperatures up in the 80s tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday across much of Illinois, and then on Saturday and Sunday into Indiana as well. And so the eastern Corn Belt gets a break here, and hopefully they can get something into the ground. The western Corn Belt, not so lucky. We've got a fairly good day today and tonight in Iowa, and then showers come in there, and they linger through Saturday and Sunday. They'll be in there tomorrow into Saturday, not clear out to Sunday, and some pretty heavy activity expected in southern and eastern Iowa. So that's going to keep the ground soggy there. But those showers finally do get over into Illinois Sunday night, I think. I think it's a little slower than some of the models have. Sunday night and Monday, and then we'll be back in the showers. And some of those could be pretty heavy, especially in central and southern Illinois into Indiana Monday night and Tuesday. So the window is opening. It's going to slam shut again on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Slam shut in a big way?
Not in a big way. It'll hold things for a couple of days, but then the weather next week does not look as favorable as these next few days. We've got this showery pattern is going to continue, and incidentally, it's going to spread northward into the spring wheat area as well, where they're starting to worry a little bit about getting that crop planted.
And tell me about, speaking of wheat, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, and I know it's one of your favorite crops. It is pretty disease-prone, especially when it's wet. Do you think the soft red and the hard red winter wheat crop will have some problems in it by the time we get to the first week of May?
Yeah, I think we'll start to see some of those foliar diseases develop in the soft red belt as this weather turns soggy again. In the hard red winter belt, the damage was done with that early April freeze,
right.
And now these very warm temperatures are not going to help out because there's significant damage there. I don't think it's a disease problem for them, but it's certainly a freeze damage, and that costs them a few hundred million bushels down there from what they initially expected.
And then if you take a look around the rest of the planet, what do you see?
Well, the rest of the planet seems to be doing pretty well. We've got no problems in Europe, variable weather there. China, warm in the north, it get the crop into the ground there, and in the south, the usual abundance of precipitation. India, in between monsoons, is their usual hot and dry. And South America looks pretty good now as we're in this intercrop period down there.
Pete, thanks much.
My pleasure.
Pete Levitt, meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on Thursday afternoons. You have a good day. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson in Morris at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.